This week in KMA Land, Shenandoah Council approves water conservation amendments final reading. Dry winter impacts Shen water issues. Weekend wildfires scorch KMA Land counties. One person killed in Bartlett salvage yard explosion. Sirens herald statewide tornado drill. And KMA Land lawmakers comment on HMO tax bill. I'm Mike Peterson. Water and fire were two themes this week. First, Shenandoah's revamped water conservation ordinance is now in place. By a 3-1 vote Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council approved the third and final reading of an amendment to Chapter 93 of the city's water conservation ordinance. Council members then formally adopted the amendment by that same vote. Under the amendment, conservation stages 1, 2, 3, and 4 would be replaced by water watches, warnings, and emergencies. City Water Superintendent Tim Martin covered another change in an interview with KMA News. Residents are now allowed to use water hoses to fill buckets.
Currently now, we're not really supposed to use a hose to fill up anything, a bucket or that sort, or water a yard. In the new one, you'll be able to use a hose to fill your bucket. So we're kind of changing some language like that.
Also allowed is the use of a rain barrel to collect precipitation. Like the previous ordinance, Martin says the amended regulations outlined penalties for conservation violators.
The first violation will simply be you get a call or a letter from me saying, hey, you know, you can't do that. The second one will be a written notice of violation and a penalty, I would believe, of 2 times the water bill. And then the third one would be I think it goes to 5 times the water bill. And if there's continuous breaches of the water conservation, then they could have their water turned off temporarily until either the fines are paid or until they can comply.
Councilman Jeff Capps once again cast the lone dissenting vote, reiterating that water restrictions should be imposed on local businesses.
I just talked to Milan, and he said we do have legal rights to control the water of businesses, and I still think that we need to possibly think of some way that they can have to do some conservation too if the stage 4 or the new ordinance 3, if it gets worse. I think we need to be ready for the worst.
Martin, however, questioned whether regulating the amount of water businesses use is the direction the city should take.
I've seen one ordinance where there's basically the residential side would be limited to 6,000 gallons a month. And so what happens is when you start restricting quality of life, if we were to enact something like that, then the residential businesses and stuff would have to do the same, since you're infecting quality of life issues such as only a certain amount of water per month, or you would get fined or possibly shut off. Do not want to go that direction, but I think that's probably one of the legal ways that you could do that.
Councilman Richard Jones was absent. Discussions on the water conservation ordinance followed another dry winter in Shenandoah and elsewhere in KMA land. As a result, Shenandoah officials are asking residents to continue water conservation efforts. Back in October 2024, the City Council placed the community under Stage 4 water restrictions, which prohibits most outdoor watering, except for businesses selling or growing plants, and restricts the filling of swimming pools. Martin says the city's water level suffered from a lack of moisture this past winter.
We take the current wells that are running usually between 9 or 10, and we average the pumping level at the lowest peak. So I think we were down to, 58 inches? 58 inches or so last time we did this. So what that means is when all the pumps are running or the wells are running, the ones we are using, the average water in the wells is 58 inches.
As of this week, the U.S. Drought Monitor indicated more than 76% of Page County is under D0 abnormally dry conditions, while 23% is in D1 moderately dry conditions. Drought.gov, the National Integrated Drought Information System, states more than 3,600 people in Page County are affected by drought, and that this past winter it was the third driest on record in the county. That's why Mayor Roger McQueen implores residents to continue the diligence in water usage.
With very limited snowfall, which we should have an average of at least 14 inches, we haven't even gotten a stiff, you know, I think the last one we had, we blew it off with leaf blowers. I guess I want to stress on how important it is that we continue to conserve, not just here, but across the county and across the state, because we're in a drought that has been going on for 6 to 10 years in different places, and it is affecting the groundwater supply so much.
McQueen says Shenandoah is not alone in dealing with continuing drought conditions.
There were several towns last summer, you know, that had to go into boil advisories because they had completely deleted their stores, you know, in their water tower, causing a drop in their system pressure. You know, I looked up and at least a dozen towns, you know, were suffering some kind of water conservation measures or restrictions. You know, luckily up around Avoca, they were able to get a pipeline from Council Bluffs, which pulls out of the Missouri River, to help solve some of their problems.
At least one longtime resident questions whether the city is doing enough to address the water situation. Mike, like many residents, Ernie Oust received letters regarding the city's Stage 4 water conservation regulations. Oust questioned the city's handling of water issues and whether enough progress has been made on the Fremont Buried Channel Aquifer Project at Tuesday's council meeting.
I haven't seen an engineer's report or a schedule of events that, you know, this needs to be done and that needs to be done. I hear rumors that, you know, DNR approval is needed. USDA grant monies are needed, but nothing seems to happen.
A former Shenandoah mayoral candidate and supporter of the West Tarkiel Reservoir Project in the 2000s, Oust called on city officials to contact officials with the USDA, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and other agencies, as well as elected officials, in an effort to address the city's water needs.
The critical issue has gone on way too long for to not have something built, something happening, some construction taking place that moves us to a position where we have adequate water.
The Queen responded to Oust's comments on KMA's Morning Line program Wednesday morning. With a project such as the aquifer and in dealing with federal agencies, the mayor says things take time.
It's similar to what we went through on the wastewater plant. How long did it take us to get through all the hoops before we actually broke ground? And that's where we're at. And I've said this for a year and a half, you know, we are going after this as fast as we can. Things take time, you know, the land acquisition, acquiring that land, you know, it wasn't just in a week we could do that. It takes time to go through the legal part of it.
Back in August, the council unanimously approved the final purchase and easements of 15.9 acres of the project from Barry Bankston. Plans call for tapping into an aquifer located about 7 miles west of the community and drilling at least 2 wells into the aquifer near 190th Street and 355th Avenue. Martin says the aquifer project invokes 3 phases.
We'll have the well drilling and development. We'll have the well houses and layout of the land. And then we will have the pipe coming to town. So it's 3 separate projects, 3 separate bids. And then we also have MidAmerica putting in about 3 miles of 3-phase wiring, which is not bid out by us, but it's done by them.
McQueen, however, declined to specify a timeline for the project's construction. One earlier estimate placed the aquifer's construction at $10 million, with $1 million covered by a USDA grant awarded to the city. A fire was the other dominant element in the news this past week. Dry conditions impacting water supplies in Shenandoah and elsewhere are also providing perfect conditions for wildfires, including a large grass fire in eastern Fremont County last weekend. Shenandoah Fire Chief Justin Marshall confirmed to KMA News that numerous departments battled a large grass fire beginning in the area of U.S. Highway 59 and 250th Street in Fisher Township last Saturday afternoon after a burn pile of fire veered out of control. At the time of that call, Marshall says Shenandoah crews were already tackling a timber fire along Manti Road, prompting firefighters from Farragut, Coyne, and Riverton to respond to the grass fire along Highway 59.
When they got there, they called in a few extra resources with Westboro, and Sydney and Hamburg, I believe, also came over and assisted. Yeah, I know they did. And then we were basically, we had a mile south, north to south burning, and we had a mile in a section east to west. So it was running kind of, the wind was out of the southwest, 45, 50 mile an hour. At one time, I think the time when that kicked off, the humidity was around 12-15%, so they'd tell you how dry it was.
In addition to the high winds, Marshall says temperatures reached the mid-90s while crews attempted to suppress the blaze. The fire chief says a cabin and 2 additional residences were in the path of the blaze, but thanks to the work of crews and multiple area producers using tractors and discs to create fire breaks, Marshall says firefighters brought the fire under control before it reached the residences.
They just show up with tractors and tillage equipment, discs, and you know, they put themselves in danger and their equipment in danger, and they started making very nice fire breaks for us. They were a lifesaver. I mean, we couldn't have got control of that fire as quickly as we did without them. So that I just can't reiterate how much we appreciate you know, the neighborly help here with producers and farmers and acreage owners with their equipment. It's priceless.
Marshall says crews still spent a couple of hours putting out hot spots after bringing the fire under control at around 3:30 p.m. While no injuries reported, Marshall says well over 200 acres were consumed by the blaze. Following Saturday's incidents, Marshall says a burn ban was implemented in both the Farragut and Shenandoah fire departments in Fremont County, which includes the Monroe, Walnut, Fisher, and Locust Grove townships, until further notice. Though a countywide ban was not in place, Fremont County Emergency Management Coordinator Clayton Long still urged proper precautions.
We're still pretty dry. We need substantial rainfall before we get out of these conditions. I know residents are seeing their lawns greening up, but there is still excess of fuel out there. So we're a few inches away from being out of this.
Long says a countywide burn ban requires a majority vote of all of the county's fire chiefs.
With this latest poll we did, there were less in favor of the burn ban, so ultimately the motion didn't carry, although cities, fire chiefs of fire districts, and supervisors can request burn bans for their jurisdictions without a countywide burn ban.
With the risk of grass fires still high, Long strongly encourages anyone wishing to connect an open burn to take several precautions. One person was killed in an explosion at a KMA land salvage yard Tuesday afternoon. Ethan Hewitt reports.
The Fremont County Sheriff's Office says at around 12:10 p.m., deputies responded to reports of an explosion at J-Dog Salvage at 2050 Waubonsie Avenue in Bartlett. Upon arrival, the Sheriff's Office says responders located one deceased employee. Authorities say that investigators determined the employee was in the process of disassembling a large commercial fuel tank at the time the explosion occurred. While the victim's name is being withheld pending notification of next of kin, the Fremont County Sheriff's Office, Fremont County Medical Examiner's Office, and Iowa State Fire Marshal investigated the incident. Authorities say the Occupational Safety and Health Administration was also notified and is assisting with the investigation. The Iowa State Patrol, Mills County Sheriff's Office, Tabor Police Department, and Tabor, Thurman, and Sydney Fire Departments assisted the Sheriff's Office at the scene. Ethan Hewitt reporting.
What would you do if you heard this sound? National Weather Service officials hope you seek shelter as it's a siren heralding the issuance of a tornado warning. Emergency management officials across Iowa and Nebraska joined the Weather Service in statewide tornado drills Wednesday morning. The siren sounded in both states at around 10 a.m. Residents were asked to review their tornado and severe storm safety procedures. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program, Page County Emergency Management Coordinator Jill Harvey says residents should seek shelter when a warning is issued.
You want to go to the lowest interior room that you can. So if you have a basement, that's the best place away from windows. If you do not have a basement, get to the lowest floor you have. Suggestion is to go into a bathroom, which is usually an interior room of your home, doesn't have the windows, just gives you a little more protection.
During severe weather season, Harvey says Page County is testing its sirens every third Wednesday of the month at 10 a.m.
So at 10 a.m., our dispatch will send out the warning through our radio system just to let our responders know that we're going to be testing them. And then we will set those off. Usually it starts at 10 a.m. Sometimes it's a little after 10 when you hear them. They do go out in a couple, you know, we test them by groups on that day. So there's two different systems that are tied together. So it might not be right at 10, but it'll be soon after that.
Wednesday's tornado drill was part of the Weather Service's Severe Weather Awareness Week observance. Red Oak School District coped with a tragedy this week. Last Thursday, 17-year-old Rylan Mertz was killed in an ATV accident southwest of Red Oak. A junior at Red Oak High School, Mertz was heavily involved in the district's FFA program. Superintendent Ron Lorenz says his passing rattled the district.
Rylan Mertz was, by all accounts, a wonderful young man. He was a cherished member of our community, of our school district, and it's been very difficult for a lot of people. His passing has been deeply felt across our entire school community and our community. He had a meaningful impact on students, staff, and families. And I say that because I've not spoken with anyone who can even imagine saying anything negative about this young man. He was a great kid.
At least one member of the public spoke to the board during public comment asking for the school to be canceled Friday so that students and staff could attend Mertz's funeral. Dusty Guzman says several students would miss school regardless.
Children will go regardless of whether it's been canceled or not, but you're going to get a tremendous amount of call-outs, and it's not really fair if the staff can't go who taught him his whole life. So really, that's the only thing I wanted to mention is that I know there's a lot of student body, and I thought maybe more parents would show up, but that we really would appreciate if you guys would do the right thing and cancel school, use a snow day. I know we do that for some sports. I think we should be able to do that for
funeral. Lorenz defended his decision not to cancel school for the funeral, saying he consulted with mental health providers from Green Hills AA.
The decision to not cancel school was not taken lightly. It was based upon guidance from experts. It was based upon best practice in schools. And that best practice in school crisis response emphasizes maintaining structure and routine, keeping students in a safe, supportive environment. Mental health professionals have said and said to me emphatically, don't let school out.
While school was still in session Friday, Lorenz emphasized that any student who wanted to attend the funeral was allowed to do so.
Any student who wishes to attend that funeral will be excused. There will be no judgment. There will be no repercussions. There will be nothing other than just a hug as you walk out the door. We have never said to anybody, you can't go to the funeral. In fact, we have told teachers, be flexible. Do not assign tests. Do not assign homework. Do not assign rigorous academic assignments. We've got to help our kids just get back on their feet a little bit.
Lorenz added that district staff members were allowed to attend without having to take leave. Services for Mertz were held Friday morning at Lorette Funeral Chapel in Red Oak. Members of the Green Hills AAA Crisis Response Team were present in the district since Friday. Well, property tax rates are expected to hold relatively steady for Page County in the upcoming fiscal year. At a special meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors held a public hearing on its proposed maximum property tax levy for fiscal year 2024, beginning July 1st. Based on the county's public hearing notice, the proposed total countywide property tax rate for fiscal 27 is roughly $7.34 per $1,000 valuation, a nearly 14% drop from the current $7.47 per thousand. Supervisors Chair Judy Clark says much of that change was in the general basic levy, which dropped from $3.50 per thousand to $3.43 per thousand, with the remainder of the levies remaining roughly the same.
General supplemental is the same as $2.60. Rural basic is down from $2.94 to $2.91. And the debt service for the jail is down from $137 to $131.
Assuming a 10% increase in property valuation, county documents indicate the proposed tax rate would result in roughly 1.5% increase in county property tax bills for both urban and rural residential taxpayers and a 9% increase for commercial properties. Clark says the proposed rates would also bring in slightly more revenue for the county due to valuation increases.
At the total tax asking is about, it's about $260,000 increase, which is pretty darn good.
Clark says Tuesday's hearing was the first of two required by the state in the budget, but she notes the rate could still be adjusted lower before budgets are due to the state by the end of April.
Mainly, this is just to approve this first notice of public hearing for the property tax levy, the proposed property tax levy. As I said, this may change before our next hearing, but I'm not sure. It may stay the same. It can go down, but it cannot go up.
At its regular meeting following the special meeting Tuesday, the board also set the second public hearing on the full proposed fiscal 27 budget for its April 21st meeting. Planning for a new business park in the south end of Clarinda continues. At its regular meeting Wednesday evening, the Clarinda City Council unanimously approved awarding the Hugh and Maxine Loudon Business Park infrastructure project work to Crane Construction of Clarinda, totaling just over $3.5 million. The bid one of two received for the project, the second coming from Bluffs Paving and Utility Company in Crescent for just over $4.6 million. Plans call for the installation of the necessary public infrastructure at the business park, located on roughly 50 acres of land along the Highway 271 bypass between AgriVision Equipment and AgriLand FS. City Manager Gary McLarnon says Crane Construction's bid also came in under the engineer's estimate of roughly $3.7 million.
The engineers have looked over all the numbers and they really don't see any issues with it. I do like the bid from Crane Construction because it's actually even lower than the engineer's estimate. And obviously they're a local company, so I thought it was very good that they ended up getting the low bid.
Last year, the council approved using roughly $3.5 million in general obligation corporate purpose bonds to install the necessary infrastructure for the business park, including streets, water, sanitary sewer, storm sewer, and street lighting. McLarnon says the plan is to begin the work as soon as possible.
As soon as we can get all the contracts and stuff signed, he's ready to start. He's got 185 working days to get it done, so it should be done by the end of the year.
McLarnon adds he was satisfied with the interest the city received for the project.
I really thought we'd get five or six bids, but we just got two, but that's okay. I mean, we got one that I thought was very reasonable, and they are obviously a company we've done business with for years, so I guess I didn't see any big issues with only receiving the two.
At its regular meeting late last month, the council heard an update on the project from Dave Sturm of Snyder & Associates, the project's engineer. In addition to access off the bypass, Sturm says the business park will also include extensions off 7th Street and Glenn Miller Drive, creating over 20 lots available for potential commercial development, the majority of which will be around 2.5 acres. Vision Shenandoah officials say it's another step forward in assisting the community with various projects. Officials of the Charles E. Lakin Foundation recently granted the organization formal fund status. Dr. Margaret Brady is Vision Shenandoah's executive director. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Monday morning, Brady says the designation is a major milestone for the organization.
That means that for Shenandoah, Vision Shenandoah will be the group that works with the Charles E. Lakin Foundation directly to manage the money and to help great things happen in this community. And we're super excited about this process. They're working through some details with their lawyers on how that all might look, and we're excited about hearing in the next couple of weeks exactly how the funds are going to be available and what the grant process is.
Shenandoah is one of 51 communities in the region selected to share $165 million as part of the foundation's Revitalize Southwest Iowa initiative. Brady says the designation sets the process for future funding for Vision Shenandoah's proposed projects, such as the Shenandoah Fieldhouse project planned for construction in 2029.
So the way this works is at the first quarter of 27, after we have been the fund advisor for a year, there will be grant funds available to be used by the community, where the primary money can be used, but it needs to be repaid into the principal. The grant funds will be able to use, and that's about $800,000 a year that we'll be able to use for fund projects in the community that are nonprofit projects that don't need to be repaid.
Brady says the designation will help address some of Vision Shenandoah's main objectives, such as housing projects.
The main money, what you use it for, is things that can be paid back, like housing. And so we are already working on some rehab housing projects. We've got two properties that we've acquired that needs a makeover. And so we're working on putting requests for bids out. And so if you're a contractor and you're interested in bidding on these projects, reach out to me so I make sure you're on my email list.
Lakin Foundation officials awarded $16.35 million in seed money in 2025 for ventures helping the community grow and improve. Only $800,000 per year is allocated in each community involved in the initiative for projects. Of course, Margaret Brady is also the manager of the mill, the renovated Johnson Brothers Mills building, which has now been in operation for 2 years in Shenandoah. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.